Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 08-5403. Sarah E. Orzac, Appellant versus Mark Sullivan, Director, United States Secret Service. Mr. Cohen for the appellant, Ms. Wright for the appellee.
May it please the court, I'm Sheldon Cohen. I apologize for my voice today. I'm suffering from a terrible cold, so I hope you'll be able to understand me. I plan to take 8 minutes for my argument and reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. The Secret Service in this case revoked Ms. Orzac's security clearance by a notice of determination. It said, "You processed not an evidence counterfeit for a period of over 4 months. Therefore, you were or should have been familiar with counterfeit currency. As a special agent trainee with routine exposure to counterfeit currency, you knowingly passed counterfeit currency, and your claims to the contrary are not credible." The crux of this case is there any evidence that Ms. Orzac knowingly passed counterfeit, and can the court review the agency's decision to find out? Ms. Orzac's complaint pleaded that there was no evidence. Clearly, knowingly passing counterfeit currency by a Secret Service agent is a matter where one cannot avoid losing their clearance. Although the evidence may support the conclusion that she was inattentive or careless, that would not necessarily cause the loss of her clearance, but she was never able to, given the chance to make that argument. We believe that there was...
I thought she did have an opportunity to state her side of the case.
She did have an opportunity. She did have a process by which she stated her case, but she does not have an opportunity to challenge the finding that she knowingly passed the counterfeit. Ms. Orzac, in her...
In other words, you mean she didn't have a formal hearing?
There were a three-step process. The agency made a decision, she appealed it to the appeal board, and the appeal board upheld the decision that it was knowing, and at that point, she filed this complaint with the district court.
Right.
My point is that once there is a finding that she knowingly passed the counterfeit, there is no further appeal for her of that decision unless this court will overturn that. We submit that there is no reasonable evidence in this case, no reasonable facts to support the finding that there was knowingly passing of counterfeit currency. The government argues that the Department of Navy versus Agin is an absolute bar to any judicial review of an agency's decision regarding a security clearance. The Supreme Court in Hamdi versus Rumsfeld, in considering the Agin case, held that Agin is not an absolute bar to judicial review of the president's war powers. There were other cases where the president's war powers or powers to grant security clearances have been held to be judicially reviewable, where the agency hasn't followed its own regulations or where there are constitutional claims.
Yeah, well, Hamdi was a constitutional issue, right?
Hamdi was a constitutional issue. In Hamdi's case, admittedly, Hamdi dealt with the loss of liberty.
There's a due process claim, and there was a clear liberty interest at stake because it involved physical confinement.
Hamdi's freedom was at stake, and here Ms. Orzac's career is at stake, and that is also a liberty interest. And we believe we have adequately pleaded and raised that liberty interest, where she has lost her job, where there has been a finding that she has, as a Secret Service agent, willfully, knowingly passed counterfeit currency. That, we submit, is a stigmatizing accusation combined with the loss of her clearance that does raise a constitutional issue. And we believe we did raise that issue both in the complaint and in the response.
The complaint doesn't refer to liberty interests, though, does it?
We do not use those words specifically, but we did plead in the complaint that she would suffer irreparable harm by being unable to work for any government agency, law enforcement agency, private contractor dealing with national security or any matters considered sensitive.
Well, that doesn't exactly notify the district court that you're making a constitutional claim.
We did raise, in response to the government's motion for summary judgment, arguing the Webster v. Doe, which itself says that colorable constitutional claims may be reviewed by the court in the context of security clearance denial. And we submit that the government and the court was on sufficient notice that we were raising a constitutional claim, both by what was pleaded in the complaint and by what was argued in the response to the motion for summary judgment.
If you don't have a constitutional claim, what law is there to apply? In other words, why isn't this committed to agency discretion by law?
This is committed to agency discretion by law, but that law is circumscribed by having to that discretion has to be based on facts. Executive Order 12968, which is the executive order which governs the...
That would be true, right, in any circumstance where a decision is committed to agency discretion by law, which would then negate that exception to judicial review in the APA, if that were the case, right?
It would not necessarily
There's a little bit
be,
of a puzzle there in the APA.
It would not necessarily be that exception. We submit that there are standards, and the Executive Order 12968 does create the standard. And that executive order says these decisions must be based on fact. And we submit that there are no facts to support the finding of knowingly passing counterfeit currency.
Well, there isn't any dispute, I gather, as to the facts. It's only as to whether she knowingly did those actions. Is that right?
That is correct, Your Honor. And we submit that there's no evidence to support a conclusion that she knowingly did so.
Well, it's an inference, right? That she knowingly did so is inferred from the undisputed facts.
But there must be...
In light of her 4 months...
Yeah.
Well, actually, it was 3 months. It was from September 28th to January 6th.
Right. So all the preceding facts are undisputed, and then the service draws this inference from those facts. You disagree with the inference.
That is correct, Your Honor. But we
disagree with the inference, but that's not a question of fact.
But we submit that there must be facts to support the inference.
Well, the facts are the ones that are undisputed here about her having worked with counterfeit currency and so on.
Those facts are undisputed, but, Your Honor, our point is that those facts do not support an inference that she knowingly did so. They may support a finding that she was negligent or she was careless or she was inattentive, but there's not one single fact there that supports the inference that she knowingly did so. When Ms. Orczak...
That may be, and that's certainly your argument, but that is not an argument in which you're saying that the decision was not based on fact. You're saying that it was based on an erroneous inference from the facts.
Your Honor, that may be another way of phrasing what I'm arguing. And
then the question is whether we get to review the inferences drawn by the service, right?
The question is whether
And whether it's Egan or Webster, that the answer to that's pretty clear, isn't it? We don't.
Well, even under Egan, we submit that you have a right to review this decision because the executive order requires that there be facts, and we submit that there are no facts. So therefore, we believe that gives you a basis to review under the Administrative Procedures Act.
Okay, you're into your report.
The complaint refers to a polygraph, but it doesn't refer to the results of the polygraph?
It does not refer to the results of the polygraph. In the letter of a notice of determination, it said in the polygraph, Ms. Orczak did not deny passing the counterfeit, but she denied knowing that it was counterfeit. I see my time is up, and so I reserve the rest for rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Abby Wright, representing Mark Sullivan, Director of Secret Service. The plaintiff challenges the Secret Service's determination to revoke her security clearance. And I think as the court has picked up on, the real challenge here is to the inferences the agency drew. It's undisputed that Ms. Orczak passed counterfeit currency. So the question is what conclusions the agency was to draw from that. And those conclusions and that affirmative prediction that the agency makes regarding her eligibility for access to classified information is precisely the kind of determination that Egan and Webster say is not subject to judicial review.
Your legal position is much broader than that, however, right?
Yes. Our legal position is that there is no judicial review of the merits of a security clearance determination, including
regardless.
We do not argue if the agency had enacted its own procedures that were additional to Executive Order 12968, for example. We're not here arguing that the agency could not be held to certain its own procedural regulations. So I think we actually are on
But if there are no such regulations, the agency can do it for any reason at all, and the courts can't review that.
The agency has to act within the executive order.
What does that mean? Does that mean the courts can review?
No, the courts cannot review the agency's determination.
Period. No matter
period.
What. No matter how arbitrary.
Yeah. So if she denied that she was the person having lunch and just a mistaken identification, and she had proof that she was, you know, in California on that particular day and time, and had affidavits from people, had photographs, had a TV news program, you know, showing she was in California. Nevertheless, no judicial review.
Nevertheless, no judicial review. But there are two levels of review that plaintiff received, and she received notice of her ability to use those levels of review. She was represented by counsel. She appeared in person before a hearing officer and then had an appeal to a high-level security appeals board. So there's two layers of review built in to the process. And so I think in a case like you suggest, Your Honor, even if the investigating officers had reason or no reason, there's layers of review, and I think that protects the ability of employees to present their case.
But the point there is that review. There's no judicial review of that review.
There is no judicial review of that review.
And even if that review didn't exist, your position would be the same.
Mm-hmm. Our position would be the president, as the court said in Egan, the president has the constitutional authority to classify and protect information that bears on national security. And the president, in a series of orders beginning right after World War II, has put in place protections for employees. So we don't really need to, I don't need to opine on what would happen if those weren't in place, but the president can exercise that constitutional authority.
Could Congress enact a law providing for judicial review of this? In other words, do you have a problem with footnote 2 of Judge Bates's opinion?
I think that the Federal Circuit cases that plaintiff cites, King v. Alston and Cheney versus Department of Justice, the government obviously took the opposite position in that case, that Congress could not, even through the Civil Service Reform Act, allow review of the merits of a security clearance determination.
I thought Egan sort of left that open in terms of when you read the dissent particularly.
I don't want to say that a court has decided that issue.
Right.
And I don't think this court needs to decide that issue, obviously, in this case, because
there's no way to read the majority to say even that is barred, but I didn't know that it had been decided.
Yeah. I didn't mean to suggest that it had been decided, but I don't think this court, obviously, that issue is not in this case, because there's no congressional attempt to do so.
Would that be tantamount to raising a due process claim? Mistaken identity with there, what I was trying to posit was sort of absolute proof that she could not have been the person.
It's possible that there could be we're not taking a position in this case on what the limits of a court's constitutional review are, but a substantive due process claim, it's possible to imagine a shocks the conscience type.
And that would be reviewable.
Well, we're not taking a position in this case. The decision in Webster was, of course, quite limited and involved the interpretation of the National Security Act. And the court said that Congress did not intend to preclude review of constitutional claims.
We've been talking about reviewability, and it seems to me that's the appropriate thing to be talking about. But the district court couched its conclusion in terms of jurisdiction. That's not really what's at stake here, is it?
Well, this court has cases that say when review is precluded under the APA, the court lacks jurisdiction.
Well, we've also said repeatedly that the APA is not a grant of jurisdiction. It's a grant that creates a cause of action.
I think our position is that the district court was correct to dismiss for lack of subject matter jurisdiction when it found that it did not have the ability to review under the APA and under Department of Navy versus Egan. And insofar as the district court.
Your motion was for dismissal under 12B1 or 12B6.
That's correct. Our filings below didn't elaborate much on the 12B6 issue, and that district court noted that fact. And so far as the district
court. Isn't the problem here an absence of standards for review?
Well, I think there's, yes, I think that is.
That's an APA problem.
She brought an APA claim, and so we proceeded to argue the case on the APA terms of committed agency discretion by law, which is the phrase that Egan also used. One could view Egan, I think, as a broader statement precluding judicial review even in the absence of the APA.
One could, but it might not be prudent.
Might not.
Are you familiar with our case in Cartseva?
I am, Your Honor.
Yeah. Well, under that analysis, hasn't she pled enough to raise a constitutional claim?
I think the district court was correct when it said that she had not pled a constitutional claim, colorable or otherwise. In her complaint, she talks about irrevocable harm. There's nothing ties that to a liberty interest or a due process claim. So that it would be a procedural due process claim based on a liberty interest.
She says she's been denied her profession.
She nowhere says that she's been denied any particular procedures or that any of the procedures she was offered were deficient. So insofar as she alludes to constitutional claims in her brief, those are procedural due process claims. And so I think she's missing the sort of procedures portion of that claim. A second point, this court in Doe v. Cheney, in terms of the stigma, the agency in this case, although the accusation is, of course, now public, the agency does not publicly disseminate the information knowingly passing count of recurrency was the reason for the revocation of the security clearance. That information is only available to other agencies that grant or deny security clearances. So there's been no, the agency itself hasn't.
Does that include all law enforcement?
You mean state law enforcement? Or I think it's only federal.
All right, so all federal law enforcement.
It would be any federal agency that grants or revokes security clearances, so it would include federal law enforcement.
So you mean a state couldn't find out that someone had been denied a security clearance?
Well, the denial of a security clearance is something that they could find out. But the court in Egan said the denial itself is not a stigmatizing event because it's a prediction that the agency is attempting to make. It doesn't necessarily reflect on your character.
Well, I don't remember whether in Egan we are dealing with the initial denial or revocation. This is a revocation.
Was an initial denial. That's correct in Egan.
And this is a revocation, which almost inevitably entails some greater stigmatization. Something happened, right? And in any job interview, asked why she left the service, if she said, well, it's because I lost my security clearance or I was terminated, either one, which was also because of the clearance, it's going to come out, right?
Well, I think there's a distinction between what she would have to disclose and what the agency can be the causal source for the stigma. But I would like to go back to my first point, which is that, first, we don't think that she pled that in her complaint or argued it below, and second, that she certainly didn't, and he hasn't argued in this court that there were any procedures that were missing or any deficient procedures. And so insofar as she's attempting to raise a procedural due process claim, that's an important part of her claim that's just not present before the court.
The court below, district court, specifically held that she got all the procedures she was due, right?
That's right. Yeah. And she doesn't claim otherwise.
Yeah. Further questions?
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Wright. Mr. Cohen?
Your Honor, Judge Rogers, you raised the Cartseva case. I was counsel in the Cartseva case 18 years ago. It's a long time, but I believe that case is still good law. Every time Ms. Orzak has to apply for a job, she'll have to list, have you ever been, the application always asks, have you ever been fired or resigned under threat of termination? Do you have a security clearance? Have you lost your security clearance? No employer, when she answers those questions, yes, she's been fired, and she's been fired because she lost her security clearance because she was found guilty of knowingly passing counterfeit information, is going to hire her. And that's been...
So you're saying this is a liberty interest, right?
I'm saying yes, sir.
And what is the liberty interest? It's not in stigmatization because the agency isn't publicizing this. If she sought a job outside of law enforcement, this would not be a problem.
It is stigmatizing because she must self-publicize. Every time she applies for a job, she must publicize that information. So even though the agency is not publicizing it, she has lost her job, and she is required to answer that question. So therefore, it becomes stigmatizing.
Where is she working now?
She is cleaning restrooms and bars because that's the only job she can get. She has applied for a job as a security guard at a mall and cannot get that job because she has lost her clearance.
And I predict that's not a job that requires a clearance. It's simply that this is the background fact that caused them to deny the job.
That is correct, Your Honor. That particular job as a mall security guard does not, but nevertheless, she was not hired because of this stigma. No job that in law enforcement, in security, in government contracting, anything that requires a position of trust is available to her for the rest of her life as a result of this decision. And we submit, Your Honor, that there is a standard, and the standard is there must be facts, and there were no facts to support this decision. I see my time has expired. I thank the court.
Thank you, Mr. Cohen. Ms. Wright, thank you. The case is submitted.